He was positive Father Brian Teigman, the Glacier Heart intendant, was at least generally aware of Clinton's suspicions. The intendant, like all intendants, had been assigned to Glacier Heart by the Office of the Inquisition, and also, like all intendants, he was a member of the Order of Schuler. He was also a cold, harsh-minded disciplinarian. Kinnear had tried to get him replaced several times, and each time his request had been denied. That was unusual, to say the least, and bespoke an interest at a very high level within the Inquisition in keeping Teigman here, all of which meant there was no question in Kinnear's mind where his intendant's loyalties lay. Yet, sad to say, Teigman wasn't exactly the most deft agent Clinton could possibly have selected. Perhaps the Grand Inquisitor had felt sufficient dedication would substitute for a certain lack of subtleness? Or had he decided that only a moderate degree of competence would be required to keep an eye on an obviously addled eccentric like Kinnear? Whatever the logic, Teigman had been doing a very poor job of late of disguising the suspicion with which he regarded his nominal superior. He was ever so much more attentive than he'd normally been, constantly calling upon the Archbishop, checking with him, making certain he had no unexpected needs or tasks for his loyal intendant. As ways of keeping an eye on someone went, it was about as subtle as throwing a cobblestone through a window, which, unfortunately, made it no less effective. Worse, that very brute force technique told Kinnear a great deal. It told him Clinton was confident he had the Archbishop under his thumb, ready to be snapped up whenever the moment came, which meant Teigman would be alert for any arrangements Kinnear might make, and Terrace was a small enough city that it wouldn't be difficult for the Intendant and the Inquisition to monitor his actions. He'd had absolutely no idea what he was going to do after he reached his archbishopric, not even the first faint glimmering of a plan. Which was one reason he'd been astonished when he arrived here and discovered that, apparently, he wasn't the only one who'd been thinking about that. Now he reached into the inner pocket of his cassock and withdrew the letter once more. He didn't know who'd sent it, and he didn't recognize the handwriting. He supposed it was entirely possible it had been sent to him on Clinton's orders as a means of provoking him into a false move to help justify his own arrest when the time came, but it seemed unlikely. The degree of subtleness such a strategy implied went far beyond anything Clinton or the Inquisition had ever before wasted on him. Besides, there was no need for the Grand Inquisitor to manufacture or provoke some sort of self-incriminating action on Kinnear's part. He had the authority to order Kinnear's arrest whenever he chose to, and he could always count upon the skill and energy of his inquisitors to produce whatever evidence he might feel he required. Given that, and given the contempt with which he so obviously regarded Kinnear, setting some sort of complex, subtle trap would have been totally out of character. Which left the perplexing question of exactly who else might have sent the letter. He was positive it wasn't from Wilson. First, because the letter had beaten him here. If Wilson had wanted to communicate its contents to him, he could simply have spoken to him face to face, directly, without the letter's protective obliqueness, before he ever left Zion. Second, if Wilson had actually sent it after Kinnear left Zion for some reason, he would have sent it in cipher, and he wouldn't have spent so much time speaking in what amounted to riddles. Now Kinnear unfolded it, and his eyes narrowed as he reread the single page yet again. "I realize you have reason for anxiety at this time, Your Eminence, and I understand from a mutual friend why that is. I realize also that you have no idea who I am, and I wouldn't blame you for simply burning this letter immediately. In fact, burning it might well be your best choice, although I would like to think you'll read it in full first. But our mutual friend has shared his concerns with me. I believe he's been willing to do so because I have never been a member of his inner circle, one might say. Nonetheless, I am aware of your hopes and aspirations, and of your current difficulties. It is possible I may be able to be of some assistance with those difficulties. I have taken the liberty of suggesting a few alternatives. The degree to which any one of these may be applicable will, of course, depend on many factors, which I cannot possibly properly evaluate at this time from so far away. And the fact that I am unable to give you a return address will make it impossible for you to inform me as to which, if any, of my suggested alternatives strike you as most workable. Because of that, I have also taken the liberty of making a few definite arrangements. The critical point, Your Eminence, is that any successful travel plans on your part will require you to be in one of three locations within a specific window of time. If you can contrive to reach one of those locations at the appropriate time, I believe you'll find a friendly face waiting for you. Precisely how things might proceed beyond that point is more than I dare commit to writing at this time. We can only trust in God for that. Some might say that seems a futile trust, given the darkness you and we all face, I suppose. Yet despite that present darkness, there is always a far greater light waiting to receive us. With that in our hearts, how can we not risk a little loss in this world, if that should be the price of setting our hands to the work we know God has prepared for us? There was no second or third page to the letter, or rather there was no longer any second or third page. Kinnear had taken his mysterious correspondent's advice to heart in that much at least. But he'd kept the first page. It was his talisman. More than that, it was the physical avatar of hope. Of hope, that most fragile and most wonderful of commodities. If the author of that letter had written truly, and despite a conscientious effort to remain skeptical, Kinnear believed he had, then there were people in God's world still willing to act as they believed he wanted them to, still willing to set their hands to that task, even knowing all Clinton and the twisted power of the Inquisition might do to them. That was why he'd kept that single sheet of paper, written in an unknown hand, and why he carried it in the pocket of his cassock, close against his heart. Because it reminded him, restored his hope, that light was mightier than the dark. And the reason light was mightier was that it resided in the human heart and the human soul, and the human willingness to risk everything to do what was right. And as long as even a flicker of that willingness burns in a single heart, illuminates a single soul, the dark cannot win, Jason Kinnear thought as he refolded that single priceless sheet and placed it, almost reverently, back in the pocket next to his heart once more.